Welcome back. Coming up on this week's show, news about which league got its highest rated ever game on US TV, what the CBS Serie A deal means for ESPN Plus and Peacock, latest news on where you can watch Copa America this summer, will ESPN Plus now go for Premier League after losing Serie A? Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside co-host Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, it's good to have you back. We took a week off, and I think both you and I were probably in the same boat in some ways. I was just exhausted. I mean, this has been... It seems like since the coronavirus has started, it's been 12 months. So 12 months, and with the way that the games have been scheduled in these last 12 months, it's enduring. It's like a marathon. A lot of the games stacked one after the other. Oftentimes, I mean, not that I'm complaining by any means, but oftentimes watching 3 to 4 games back to back to back, as well as covering, covering the space, running the site, doing the podcast. I was just exhausted and I needed a break. And I think the same for you, right, Kartik?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been really worn down, if I'm honest with you, because of the constant matches. You know, and sometimes I think that there's a Monday off or a Thursday off, and there isn't. And you look at the fixture list. Oh, there's a game in Serie A today. Oh, right. There's a Premier League match. And Fridays, the Bundesliga is the only league that's kept their normal kind of flow of matches, right? It's been, and that also helps because they have four less fixture dates. But yeah, it's been exhausting. I would say the Premier League and Serie A being the two great abusers. Actually, the French League too. There's Liga fixtures popping up all over the place. Tuesdays, Wednesdays. It's worn us down, and I think it's something that maybe will help us in the future cope with what's going to happen in the Qatar year, because that year is going to be nonstop, mm-hmm. right? There's going to be football every single day. I'm talking about the year that the Qatar World Cup 2022 takes place, the Winter World Cup, because I think we're going to lose a lot of our summer break, and we're going to be playing every day virtually.
And that's the thing, too, about taking a break for a week, recharging the batteries, and then coming back at it right now. We're in the international break. International games are underway. And lo and behold, news breaks like crazy this week, which we knew this was happening. We've been covering a lot of these topics for, a couple of months, if not more, several weeks at least, talking about the latest developments regarding Serie A and La Liga and the Premier League and CBS involved in a lot of this, as well as, of course, ESPN and NBC, you name it. It's been nonstop. This is going to be a massive year. I've said that before. I'll say it again. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. But first, let's talk about the news that broke this week. And that is that Paramount Plus has acquired the rights to Serie A and Coppa Italia for the next 3 seasons. So that'll start up in August and will go on for 3 more seasons. It means that ESPN Plus's coverage of Serie A will end, I think, May 23rd, I think is the date of that. And Serie A is will be receiving from CBS and Paramount Plus roughly about $75 million per season. How does that break down, Kartik, in terms of that value? Is that, you mean, kind of higher than expected or disappointment? What's your take on that?
That's more than the Bundesliga is getting. However, I think that it's if you look at how much the IMG bundle was last time. And I know Serie A says it's a 30% increase, which and there's no question that the value of Serie A has increased because of its few seasons on ESPN, in addition to Ronaldo being in the league, in addition to the league becoming more competitive. I would argue it was probably the best league to watch in Europe after the restart last year. Prior to that, I would say the Bundesliga was. And then this season in Europe, I think it's been clearly the most volatile at the top, most competitive at the top, in spite of Premier League fanboys trying to say, oh, 10 teams have led the Premier League at some point. In reality, it's not even a competitive league at the top. But I think Serie A's profile has increased. Some of that is due to ESPN, no question, having the rights. I think some of it is just kind of the natural cyclical nature of what leagues are on top, what leagues are garnering interest. So they got more per year than the Bundesliga gets. But the Bundesliga, by making a six-year commitment to ESPN in this last rights deal, I think, and this is something that's very different between European sports culture and American sports culture, or the broadcast culture. American leagues, professional leagues and college conferences tend to negotiate 5 to 10 year contracts, whereas European football leagues, European soccer leagues, and even same thing, rugby, even in darts, all of these things tend to be in 3 year rights cycles. So on the surface, they got more money out of it, but they didn't get the same. They didn't get the long term commitments. So that's. I'm writing an article actually as we speak, which might be on might be published by the time some of you listen to this on worldsoccertalk.com. That's going to address what really needs to happen now for Serie A to kick it to that next level in the U.S. now that they have a new partner and maybe a more willing partner, but also a partner that they've only signed for 3 years.
Yeah, the way I look at it, Kartik, is that this is a breakup. This is a breakup. This was there was a romance that happened. ESPN was in love with Serie A. Serie A was relatively in love with ESPN. But the last few months, the last 2 weeks especially, it seemed to be that the Bundesliga was getting more love. They were getting more games on television. You get a game, Der Klassiker from the Bundesliga on ABC. Perfect opportunity at the end of that broadcast to say, hey, check out, just go to ESPN, or ESPN Plus, in the next 20 minutes, and you've got a Juve game, kind of a top of the table clash. Go check it out. Go watch it. It's going to be a great game. You didn't get any of that. So we were sensing a little bit of, actually quite a lot of, and we were hearing from some of our sources that people attached to the league and to the league's broadcast felt that the Bundesliga was getting more love than what Serie A was getting, which is true. Absolutely. And I think in many ways that this breakup is actually probably a good opportunity for Serie A to go out on their own with CBS. And from what we've seen with what CBS has done thus far on the Champions League, on NWSL, on a Europa League, they've really, in some ways, rejuvenated some of those broadcasts. They've brought in different people. They've given it a lot more exposure. The Europa League broadcasts, just as one example, probably have never been loved as much by U.S. Television broadcasters in terms of the amount of resources, time, commitment, energy, pre-match, post-match, halftime. Europa League is a good example of that. Champions League 2, of course, as is NWSL. So I think in many ways for ESPN, it would have been very difficult for them to give the same type of reach and exposure and love that they gave to the Bundesliga as they would give it to Serie A. Oftentimes the Serie A games, you had one game a week oftentimes, and it was early on a Sunday morning. It might have been a 7:30 kickoff or an 8 o'clock kickoff. And it might have been on ESPNU or sometimes ESPN2. And from time to time, we saw that last season. We saw with the coronavirus happening and then some of the games in the Italian league at that time were supposed to be on television. That didn't happen. So I think in many ways, I mean, it's actually probably a good deal for Serie A. It's actually a good deal for ESPN. I think who gets left out here are the ESPN Plus subscribers, the ones that have grown to love that service, that love watching Serie A. It's a great league. I mean, it really is. It really is a top-level league with some great football on display. And it's different. It's different than the other leagues. It's different. It has a different identity than the Premier League, than La Liga, than the Bundesliga, than MLS. You name it. It has a different identity. And I've grown to love it more and more over the last 3 years that ESPN has had it, as well as having great commentators, Mark Donaldson, Matteo Bonetti, and Janusz Michalik, and Ross Dyer, and others that have been on those broadcasts. But I think the timing was right, and I think this is something which ESPN tried to get the rights to this. So the rights, the actual bidding process, they went through two rounds. According to my sources, CBS were well ahead from the first bid. But in the second bid is where ESPN thought that they had a chance to get it. They felt more confident that they might have gotten it. Ultimately, the league decided to go with CBS, presumably because they offered more money, presumably because they've probably put together a more impressive package in terms of what they're going to do with this league, with it being on CBS. And of course, most of those games are going to be on Paramount Plus. We still don't know all the details yet as far as Spanish language versions of the games and Italian language versions of the games. More details will be soon out there on worldsoccertalk.com, I'm sure. But Kartik, what's your take on it? Do you feel it's kind of a happy breakup?
Yeah, I think Serie A was looking for a partner that might promote them more and might give them the sort of level of promotion that that the Premier League has gotten on NBC and that that the Bundesliga is now getting on ESPN. The thing I have to point out is that the Serie A has been kind of the ugly stepchild everywhere it's been in broadcast in the U.S., which is another thing that you know, some of you might see this article I'm writing for World Soccer Talk by the time you listen to this. But at BN, there was a lot of unhappiness among my sources that BN basically was treating Serie A like a throwaway and was actually even using they would have a programming about La Liga leading into Serie A matches. And then after the Serie A match hit full time, they would have another show about La Liga. And then some of the big Serie A matches were being preempted because there would be a La Liga match on. And it wasn't, oh, they were preempting preempting matches for El Clasico. They were preempting Derby d'Italia, Juve and Inter for like Getafe and Atleti, right? That was mm-hmm. happening. Yeah. So ESPN was a better situation for them than BN. And they were very happy with the arrangement at first. But then, as you mentioned, our sources, I have sources who've told me the same thing that have told you that they were struck by the amount of promotion that was given to the Bundesliga. And quite honestly, if I'm in MLS's shoes, I'm also kind of bothered by it. That ESPN has had MLS. Now, you and I both got a release as we tape on Wednesday night, the 24th. We both got a release from ESPN today about touting MLS, and on ABC they're showing five games on broadcast television, et cetera, et cetera. They promote to the sports media a lot of MLS stuff, but they never really kind of promoted MLS, it could be argued, in the macro fashion that they have the Bundesliga this year. So I guess that puts Serie A in a position where this will probably be a happier marriage, given what we've seen CBS already do in terms of promoting Champions League and in terms of promoting NWSL. I do have to say, though, as CBS picks up more and more properties, and we're going to talk a little more about that on this show, additional properties, it's not just Serie A they're picking up in this period, that probably dilutes their ability to market each of these things individually in maybe the fashion Serie A is hoping. So unless there's a network TV component to this, and I think maybe we can discuss that as well, it may end up looking the same. I don't think it'll look any worse than it did on ESPN, but it may end up looking the same. It may not be the huge upgrade that Serie A is probably hoping for.
That's the thing, though, Kartik, is a lot of these broadcasters have relationships with the sports leagues. And over time, they get to know each other a little bit better in terms of what they provide and what they offer. So for example, like the Bundesliga many years ago was on Goal TV. Now, if you're a hardcore Bundesliga fan, you love Goal TV. You tune in every Saturday and Sunday and watch the games. And there wasn't a lot of other games going on that would bump those broadcasts. But ultimately, Goal TV is a smaller broadcaster. They're not going to get you into the homes of mass mainstream America. So after leaving Goal TV, the Bundesliga rights went to Fox. And at Fox, I think Fox promised a lot. Fox, I think the Bundesliga got really captivated and really excited about the possibilities of what Fox could provide. And I remember interviewing one of the, I think the DFL executives before Fox's coverage started. of the Bundesliga, and he was really, really positive, really, really excited. And I asked him, I said, like, well, aren't you concerned about Fox's level of coverage and they're not the greatest at covering soccer for hardcore fans? And he kind of dismissed it and said, no, don't worry. I mean, Fox is going to be great. And I think over time, they learned the hard way. There was positives, there were negatives. But at the end of that relationship Fox having the rights to the Bundesliga, I was in Germany and the Bundesliga CEO mentioned in answer to me in a press conference saying how dissatisfied he was with Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga. So it does take time. And the same thing with Serie A. Serie A has gone through kind of, these relationships with the different networks from, like you said too, they've been with Fox, they've been with a whole bunch of different, being sports. And as they go along, I think the Bundesliga is in a better place today with the ESPN. I think the Serie A will be in a better place with CBS. And I think NBC still, with the Premier League still as of today, that's still a good place. So it takes time to find that good fit where they work in partnership and they get the best out of each other. For ESPN Plus, though, Kartik, this is definitely a blow, right? I mean, because like ESPN Plus is really positioning themselves as the collection, the go-to place for soccer. So everything, you name it, I'm not going to go down the list, but there's so many rights that they have. And Serie A was a major part of that. You mean, if you like the German league, you like the Italian league, you like the Dutch league, you like the MLS, you go down the list and combine all those things together. Serie A was definitely a key component of that mix. Now that has gone, you have to wonder, ESPN, there's a hole there. And Disney... ESPN Plus, Disney has the money to spend. They have massive goals this year to double the number of subscribers from what they have currently, which is, I think, about 11 million. They want to reach, I think, about 24 million by the end of the year. I have to wonder, Kartik, if losing Serie A means that they double down on trying to get La Liga or the Premier League or both. Is it possible?
Yeah, you have to look at it two ways. Okay, so people are arguing online with me as we speak on Twitter that ESPN still has by far a larger portfolio than CBS. They have more leagues. They have college soccer. They have USL. They have all of these. They have the Indian Super League. They have the Chinese Super League. They have the A-League in Australia. Okay, they have a greater collection of rights. Portfolio of rights. But let's say the top nine leagues in terms of what we would think could drive metrics in the US, the five big European leagues, MLS, which is on ESPN, the Liga MX, and then the two very recognizable South American leagues. Now, if you look at that, and then Champions League, if you look at UEFA Champions League, if you look at that, of those top like 10 maybe needle movers, potential needle movers, CBS is actually in better shape than ESPN.
True. Right.
Which is very hard if you think of it that way, which I don't think people are, they're just looking at on a sheet of paper. Okay, they have 30 properties. CBS has five or six, but CBS has all have some value associated with them. Right? Mm-hmm. They have NWSL. They have the Champions League. They're going to have Serie A now. The Argentine League, our friend John Tannenwald with the Philly Inquirer thinks that could be a game changer. I think there's a possibility. I think it's a league that's always – the league itself has had a lot of financial difficulties. But now getting the right U.S. partner, being on English language and then the Brasileiro, which we don't know the details yet, but we do know CBS has acquired the English language rights. And their calendar is a little different, so I'm sure it'll get announced maybe during the state league tournaments over the summer or over the early summer. By that time, we'll know what CBS's plans are. So I think this puts La Liga squarely in – well, you asked about the Premier League or La Liga, right? So
yep.
It puts both squarely in focus, but I think let's talk about what's right on the horizon. We know Premier League bidding is likely to take place now and conclude maybe over the summer. The La Liga thing, And I have to go back to your reporting late last year, Chris. The La Liga thing could be imminent. And maybe this just had to happen to close the loop.
Yeah, it's so difficult because it's one of those things that I keep on hearing more and more from my sources attached to La Liga and attached to let me just say soccer in the United States because I don't want to give away my sources, but that La Liga, a deal to get La Liga away from beIN Sports and to go to another provider, so whether it's an ESPN or a CBS, seems to be imminent. But the challenge is that nobody wants to talk on the record. So beIN Sports definitely would not say anything about this. Neither would ESPN, who I've reached out to, and as I've reported, said no comment. Go to Relevant, who handles their rights in the United States. And it's practically, I mean, they're not really talking much either. So nobody's talking about it. But behind the scenes, from my sources, I continue to hear more and more scuttlebutt about that this looks imminent. The challenges with this is that beIN Sports has the rights of La Liga until 2024. And it's a complex deal. It's a global deal. And it is something that if an ESPN or a CBS or somebody else came in and said, hey, beIN Sports, is there any way possible that we can get the rights to La Liga? Or figure out a way to maybe sublicense some of the games to us, whatever it takes. And I mean, there have been discussions between ESPN and La Liga. I know that. So where that goes, how long it takes, and the involvement of the lawyers, and also trying to figure out who pays who, and if this happens. Because if this does happen, what does this mean for beIN Sports? Does that mean they're out of business? Or does that mean that they continue for the next couple of years showing Ligue 1 or a Turkish Super League? But having said all that, though, too, that's a possibility. If ESPN Plus was able to go ahead and find a way somehow to get La Liga, to get La Liga rights for the next few years, and that would be something that would replace Serie A. And if anything, really, it would be a step up, right? Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atleti, Villarreal, Valencia, etc., etc. The challenge is Leo Messi. I mean, will he still be at Barcelona next season? But it's the same challenge that CBS has with Ronaldo, with Serie A. I mean, is he going to be at Juventus 2 years from now? You never know. Things can happen. But the other part of it, though, Kartik, is with the Premier League. So we're recording this on Wednesday night. On Thursday, the Premier League is going to have a meeting with all the club chairmen. And one of the topics that will come up is talking about broadcast deals and for the next 3 years. So not only broadcast deals for the United States, but also around the world. I mean, UK, elsewhere, etc. And I'm sure that's something that's going to be a pretty fast-moving object. That's something that they'll want to go ahead and tackle pretty quickly. So it may happen before the summer. We'll have to wait and see. Again, the clubs are looking for extra money. They want to know how much more money is going to be coming in from these new TV deals, because I mean, they lost a lot of money last year, and not that they're desperate, but they definitely want more money. At the same time, too, there's also still the talk about European Super League. So some of these top clubs, Manchester United, Liverpool, etc., really, really are pressuring the Premier League to try to get as much money back as possible through TV deals. So that could happen too. And that's quite possible, is that if the Premier League wants to, if they want to open up and have a bidding war between ESPN Plus, Paramount Plus, and NBC/Peacock, that could be the bidding wars of all bidding wars, because you know that all three of those would, having the Premier League, even though it's not the best league in the world, it's the most popular English language league, soccer in the United States. So it's a huge opportunity. It's a huge get. If Paramount Plus got that, it's a game changer. If ESPN Plus got that, it's a game changer. If Peacock renews for another 3 years, that's not a game changer, but that's a big, big deal. And then there's always the possibility of somebody else. So I think that's the thing with a Serie A deal, is it's a big deal. because it puts Paramount Plus in a comfortable position now that they have a big league under their belt, a club league week in, week out for the next 3 years. And it makes ESPN Plus a little bit uneasy. They're probably thinking, okay, wow, Paramount Plus is a major competitor now, a formidable competitor, the first formidable competitor that ESPN Plus has really faced in the last 2 to 3 years when, I mean, Paramount Plus didn't exist and CBS wasn't carrying soccer. So this could be a massive, massive next few months with both La Liga and the Premier League and ESPN Plus possible. I mean, it is quite a possibility that they will go in big time. They have the money. It's a lot of it depends on the Premier League, what they want. And then don't forget Kartik, like you mentioned too. I mean, with Paramount Plus, they've got the Argentine League now. They've got Copa Argentina. They've got the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers. They've got the Brazilian League, Champions League, Europa League, NWSL, Conference League. And it's probably a couple more we're forgetting about. So you're right, though, as far as the quantity. Well, actually, quality-wise. So I think you could argue that Paramount Plus has the better quality of soccer coverage than ESPN Plus. ESPN Plus, yeah, definitely. They have the quantity. They have, I mean, if you love the German league, I mean, you've got every single game. You've got all those other leagues too. Quantity there. Value for the money is fantastic with both ESPN Plus and Paramount Plus. And then there's Peacock that seems to be pretty quiet. You don't hear NBC getting involved in a lot of these discussions in terms of trying to get more rights to more leagues. They seem pretty comfortable with the Premier League. And don't forget that NBC Universal is owned by Comcast. The same Comcast that owns Sky Sports in the UK, and that's the same Sky Sports that has a virtual monopoly of the rights to the Premier League in the UK, and I'm sure that Sky Sports will want to continue that relationship, as would NBC Sports in this country too. So it could be a cozy, comfortable relationship, but maybe at the end of the day, money talks, and I think that could be the big difference here. All right, Kartik, let's move on to Copa America, and I'll have you lead off with the news.
Yeah, so most of you probably know by now, Copa America for this summer will be on the Univision family of networks. The coverage is branded as 2DNA, but this includes matches not just on 2DNA, but on Unimas and on Univision, and presumably some matches on Galavision as well. The deal gives access to all 28 matches from this summer's tournament, including everything, all the way from group stage to the finals. Additional CONMEBOL events, women's Copa America, and the men's Olympic qualifiers for CONMEBOL. By the way, great numbers just on streaming for the women's Copa Libertadores. So the women's game is also growing in South America, just like it's growing in Europe, and it's already been big in North America. So this is the crown jewel of South American football, and Univision is very happy to have secured its return to Univision. They had lost the rights, and it's important for them in their battle with Telemundo, Chris, because what Telemundo has been able to do, NBC Universal owned Telemundo, is catapult themselves to being the number one Spanish language channel based on getting summer tournaments like the Copa America and obviously the FIFA tournaments, which NBC Universal has the Spanish language rights to in this country, to surpass Univision, even though kind of on a day-to-day basis, Univision tends to have higher ratings. Mm-hmm. But Telemundo has had these huge summer tournaments that have catapulted them to the number one spot. So this is, I think, not just from a soccer perspective or a sports perspective, just a general network perspective, programming perspective, really an important event for Univision to take back these rights.
Yeah, it's going to be a big summer for Univision because when you think about it, they have Euro 2020, which is happening at the same well, the same calendar as Copa America. So you'll have Euro 2020 games in the, I mean, late morning, early afternoon, mid-afternoon, followed by Copa America during the evening and later into the night for a whole month. And then once that's over, almost the day after it ends, I think it is the day after it ends, the Gold Cup starts up and Univision has those rights too. So they've got 2 months of back-to-back soccer practically every single day. Before those two-month periods begins, you have the Champions League going into that. They've got MLS games. For Univision, this is going to be massive. I mean, Telemundo will have, I'm sure, coverage of the Summer Olympics and some of those games too. But to me, I mean, the Copa America is where it's at. And at the same time, though, too, with Copa America, no news yet on the English language rights. So we're covering that one closely to see who gets those rights. The challenge is, though, is that if you're a broadcaster in the US and you're offered the Copa America rights in English, first of all, the vast majority of that audience, of the audience, is going to watch those games in Spanish language on Univision. And then so what you have left is the English language audience, which might be, which many of those might watch it on Univision anyway because of the atmosphere and just how great their coverage is, even if you don't understand or speak the language. And at the same time, it's for the English language audience, it's at, you know, in that same calendar month again as Euro 2020. So I wonder with this one, if the Copa America English language rights, if anyone picks them up. And if somebody does pick them up, hopefully they can get them for a bargain because it doesn't make sense to pay a lot of money for them when Univision's going to have the majority of the TV ratings. MLS announced their schedule for the rest of the season on Wednesday. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about this one because we'll have a full story at worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage, as well as the MLS TV schedule on the site too for every single game. But Some big games. There's some double headers on ABC, which is impressive. I think that's in May, and you've got your LA Galaxy against LAFC, El Tráfico on a Saturday night, prime time on over the air Fox. So far, going through the schedule from what I've seen, and I haven't had a chance to finish going through the entire schedule yet, but it's the same old, same old. It's you're not going to see a Colorado Rapids or a Real Salt Lake home game on national television. It's still going to be your, I mean, the new teams will be, I mean, Austin FC, FC Cincinnati, but then mostly it's Miami, it's LA, it's New York. It seems to be more focused on the TV markets rather than, say, the teams, rather than trying to have some parity, which is ironic. But rather than having some of the teams like the San Jose or some of these other teams that play some good attacking soccer, Atlanta is another example, too, of a team in a major TV market that is all over the national broadcasts. All right, Kartik, TV ratings. This is something I teased in the opening, and that is news about which league got its highest rated game ever on U.S. television, and it's the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich against Dortmund. Now, this happened, a few weeks ago now by the time we're talking about it, but still, it's still timely. That match that was on ABC did 576,000 for the viewership on this one, which is the Bundesliga's highest rated game ever in the US. I think the highest rated they got on Fox was, if I remember correctly, it was about 450,000 to 470,000 for a game that was on Fox. But out of the gates, right, ESPN's relationship with the Bundesliga is paying off for the Bundesliga, Kartik.
Yeah. I look, what ESPN has done is different than what everybody else does these days with soccer. And it's kind of what I had envisioned when I started the NASL 11 years ago with our television. And we actually did things to build kind of the context of the league before we put games on TV, which was Goal TV, was our TV partner at the time. We did a number of magazine shows, which our friend Juan Arango hosted, along with Andres Cordero and George Metallis, two pretty big names now, who may not have been as big names then, but big names on BN. What ESPN has done is that they have built the context around the Bundesliga on television while showing all these games on ESPN Plus and streaming. So they have worked the Bundesliga into SportsCenter. They have worked Bundesliga into their apps. They have sort of integrated this league more than any soccer property or any soccer club property they've had in the past. Obviously, when they've had World Cups and Euros, they've done a knock-up job. But into kind of the daily conversations around ESPN. Then they put a game on ABC after they had done that. And I think that that's why you see that bump in ratings versus on Fox. They would, you know, Fox showed a number of games on Fox Network television, right? One year they showed 5 or 6 matches, I think.
Yep.
But they would just throw the match on. There would be no promotion. There would be no context built around it. It was very lazily done. In fact, we would note that the studio would say FS1, whether it was on Fox over the air, FS1 or FS2. No,
right.
There was no real effort made. So this match they also let in with SportsCenter, which we didn't get in our market. And look, also there were ABC affiliates, I'm sure, around the country that didn't show the game. I experienced that in South Florida. So. Really impressive number. And this is another thing to think about. The number was pretty comparable to the numbers you get for regular season college basketball games these days on CBS and Fox, Fox Network, and was not that far off what the Premier League is generally doing in that same time slot. It was lower, but it wasn't as significantly low. The gap between the Premier League and the Bundesliga, which looked massive when the Bundesliga was on Fox and the Premier League was on NBC and was actually at that time maybe getting more consistently high numbers than it is now, doesn't look quite as wide. This is one game. It's one data point. I get that. But I think it's a pretty significant number if I have to be frank about it. Even though it's one data point, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, the other thing too about ESPN Plus, and actually, was it ESPN or ESPN2? But this past, was it Monday or Sunday, ESPN did about 45 minutes of pregame for a big Serie A match. And you had Jurgen Klinsmann, you had Alessandro Del Piero, who is really good, great communicator, has a sense of humor. Dan Thomas did a great job of making him laugh, but also making him entertaining, asking some good questions. And he had Gab McCarty. So they did about a 45-minute pregame build-up for the game that happened. And it was well done. It was really well done. And that's something, too. Even with the De Classica post-match on ESPN+, Plus, they had a post-match show where it was Kay Murray and Taylor Twellman. Went into a lot of detail, kind of recapping the game, talking about some of the high points, low points, etc. It wasn't one of those things with Fox where as soon as the game is over, 90 minutes, okay, the end of the broadcast, okay, now we're moving on to, I don't know, NASCAR or something else, whatever it would be.
Yeah.
So the shame of it is that ESPN was starting to do a lot more, showing some signs that they're wanting to help out or do more for Serie A. It was a little bit too late, unfortunately. But overall, I think this.
But I would also point out that they did this earlier in the season when before this rights negotiation had started. There was one match I can't remember. Maybe it was the Milan Derby, or maybe it was I think it was actually like Juve Napoli, where I even tweeted 10 minutes into the program that they're doing more analysis in this pre-match show with Dan Thomas hosting and with the same people you were mentioning. They didn't have Del Piero at that point. They had Jurgen Klinsmann in the studio, but then NBC had done the whole day on the Premier League, right? the NBC was just – that was that period before Danny Higginbotham joined NBC, and they were – I mean, Tim Howard was really clunky, and we talked about it all the time on this show, so I don't need to belabor it. But that they had put more effort into that 10 or 15 minutes to analyze and really promote the importance of this match and the importance of Serie A. So – that's a challenge for CBS because those voices now they've got Del Piero also, but Marcotti is not leaving ESPN. He's a featured guy at ESPN, and he has as great an expertise on that league as just about anyone. And then they have guys like Klinsmann who have played in that league, and others that really know that league well, Matteo Bonetti and others.
Well, let me
have,
Well, let me segue, because that segues perfectly into the listener mailbag. And the first question up is from Nick. And Nick says, after acquiring the Serie A rights, do you think CBS will bring on any of the Serie A experts on board? As a Serie A fan, I was rooting for the rights to stay with ESPN because the coverage has been so good, in my opinion. I understand comparisons with the Bundesliga, but ESPN has dedicated multiple analysts, a podcast, and Sunday's studio show to Serie A. I can't imagine CBS will offer the same treatment. So yeah, Matteo Bonetti, I mean, if CBS hasn't called him already, I'm not sure what's going on, but I mean, he should be the first person that they call to say, hey, here's somebody who can do co-commentary, but also can do analysis, who can do a podcast. I mean, you can write. I mean, whatever it may be, there's definitely a good ad there. Who else, though, Kartik?
Who could help? Besides Matteo, I don't know. I mean, you know, look, Steve Cangelosi has called games before. Maybe that's a guy they could call. He knows that league fairly well. They have other people who have worked previously at Goal TV or Fox that they could call. That could probably help with a presentation of Serie A, but I also think maybe they take the world feed. You know, I one of the things that there are people who tell me they regret that we don't get Banyard and Robson, which was every week, right? Yeah. That's the Stuart Robson, who also is on ESPN. That's another guy who knows Serie A really well. That's on ESPN. And Steve Banyard are the top English language team for Serie A. I think most of our listeners probably remember Steve Banyard from when he called Premier League matches and was a featured commentator Premier League. He never quite broke into like that top two or three for some reason, although I think he was rated very highly. He is the number one guy in English globally for Serie A now. So that's an intriguing possibility. If they don't nab a Matteo Bonetti, for me, that maybe you don't hire anyone. He would be number one on my list. If you don't get him, maybe you go with those big matches. Assuming Serie A stays with IMG in London calling the matches, and it's those two, Banyard and Robson. Maybe it's me, just my personal preference, because I like those two guys a great deal. And I miss Stuart Robson on Premier League broadcasts. And it's reinforced every single time there's an FA Cup weekend, which we just went through, where Robson is a co-commentator for a match. And it's to me, outrageous that the Premier League doesn't like using him. But you will hear more of him if you take the international feed for Serie A.
Yeah, the challenge that CBS is going to have is trying to find some good talents that are speak English very well, but also cover that know Serie A inside and out. And those people are out there, but I mean, they already have Fabrizio Romano, the Italian journalist who breaks a lot of transfer rumors, and he's often on CBS Sports HQ and from time to time some of the other CBS coverage. So that's somebody that's from a kind of a feet boots on the ground type of thing that you could have, but this will be a good test though for CBS, because I mean, in them acquiring all these rights for all these different leagues from around the world, are they going to put in as much effort as ESPN did? Are they going to look at this as more of a Paramount Plus / ESPN Plus method, which is basically get the rights, put them on the streaming service, and not have a pregame show, not have a halftime show, not have a post-match show? I mean, for anyone who's watched, whether it's the Championship or any other leagues that are on ESPN Plus, for the most part, we've gotten used to now kind of having a coffee break at halftime and going a bathroom break or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing going to be on other than maybe they might show some stats, or they might show some highlights or something, but it's usually most stuff that we've already seen. So this will be a great test to see how much of an effort they're going to put in. We don't know yet as far as how many of these games will be on television. We'll have to wait and see on that. I think that most of them are going to be on Paramount. Actually, all of them are going to be on Paramount Plus, but the question is, will some of them be on television? And that we don't know yet.
The ESPN just placed a Gravity Media a halftime show for championship. They don't have any
right, just, nothing.
The thing that Gravity Media is producing in Shepherd's Bush, where they broadcast these matches for, they just play the thing through. Now I'm trying to think. Yeah, I guess in Bundesliga they do that too. Come to think of it, yeah. So that's a very good point. That as much as we've all praised ESPN, and I've been accused of being overly praising them too much for the ESPN FC show. And their studio coverage and their rights. That is correct. In a lot of these cases, they've just seen them as streaming properties. They've thrown them on, and whatever is as part of the production from the production company, as I mentioned, Gravity with the championship, Bundesliga Productions with Bundesliga, they keep it on. So it's been interesting, though, because in Serie A, there have probably been more Serie A matches than any other league, Chris, where they've had Dan Thomas hosting a halftime show, or in some cases, right. K. Murray or Seb Salazar, but mostly Dan Thomas. So now that we're having you mentioned that, I'm actually realizing on the fly, Chris, they've actually given Serie A a lot more love than maybe they've been given credit for relative to other leagues.
Having said that, though, Kartik, it's quite possible that they might say, you know what, this whole studio in London thing worked out really well for us with the Champions League. We've made some great contacts. There's a lot of soccer, football journalists in the London area. Anyway, it's a hop, skip, and a jump from Paris or Berlin or from Milan or Rome. They can catch a flight. I mean, once this whole COVID thing, things stabilize, but it could be that they say, you know, I mean, let's go all in. Let's really make this a centerpiece of our coverage. In addition to the Champions League, it kind of feeds right into that. But let's go ahead and look at AC Jimbo from the Guardian podcast, well, formerly of the Guardian podcast, and see, okay, somebody who's has a lot of knowledge about the league. Let's take Ian Joy, kind of a world football connoisseur, somebody that understands and watches, you know, of course, a German expert, but also I'm sure is watching the Italian leagues too. So, and I'm sure there's many, many other people that we can think of. I mean, Ian's in New York, but in the London area, if they wanted to go ahead, or in Europe, if they wanted to go down that path, that's a possibility. And that would show the effort.
We both know a guy in the Manchester area that at one time knew Serie A better than anyone in Simon Evans. So that would be an intriguing one also.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Simon Evans.
Right. Somebody that covered Milan for many years and interviewed Ancelotti and wrote a book about his travels in Europe following that league very closely. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's possibilities. I'm sure there's a bunch of other names too that we're not thinking of right this second. That could be a good fit for that coverage if they want to. And then they could use the world feed for most of the broadcasts and then have some key commentators for the big games. Next up is, and we're going to jump all over the place a little bit here, but next up is Ted. And this question is probably a good one for you, Kartik. I'd love to get your thoughts on the potential Belgium-Netherlands league merger. I doubt that UEFA and FIFA would sanction it, but do you think there is a possibility it could actually happen? On the surface, it seems nice and like a good idea, but is it a slippery slope? If that merger is allowed to happen, then why not a La Liga Ligue 1 merger or a Premier League Bundesliga merger? And does that start inching towards a European Super League? I'm also very interested to see how this could affect a potential Liga MX MLS merger. Gianni Infantino, FIFA president, was recently asked and was talking up that idea, but wouldn't it not be fair to allow a Mexico USA combined league, but not a Belgium Netherlands version? Now, Kartik, you and I, when we talked about this last week, kind of just I think during our break, we had a short chat, and we talked about the Belgian Pro League and the Eredivisie, if they did merge together. That'd be really exciting. I'd be looking forward to seeing that.
I would too. I mean, I'd really be looking forward to seeing it. Unfortunately, we're in a position where Infantino and FIFA I have to restate this, have now realigned themselves from the European continent to the places where they're getting corporate money, the United States, China, and the Middle East. Those are really kind of the three epicenters now of FIFA power. So Infantino is likely to have one attitude toward a something involving the U.S. and Mexican federations, both of whom are close allies of his, and something involving other federations. The Dutch Federation has actually been a pretty vocal critic of FIFA and FIFA's governance. I agree with the Dutch on that. But I think that you might see some politics here where they try and obstruct the Netherlands or England or you know, the countries that have been the leading critics, which have really been Netherlands, England, France, Spain, Germany, even Italy. Infantino is Italian, but even the Italian Federation, I can tell you based on my own some of my own sources, they're not very comfortable with the direction he's taking FIFA. So they may have a complete double standard and allow this cross-border league in North America in the interest of, quote, growing the game, while they'll say, well, the game's established in Belgium and Netherlands. You know, Belgium's the number one national team in the world currently, right? So why do they need the help? So that's my concern. Would it be hypocritical? Absolutely. But I'm concerned that they're going to be hypocritical because FIFA is not consistent. What we now have learned, and I was right in the middle of this, so I'm hoping I'm not speaking out of school and breaking anyone's confidence here. But what we have learned is FIFA on the issue of promotion and relegation will apply one standard to countries on the European continent and countries like India and Australia that are not necessarily playing ball as much with FIFA's leadership. And they will apply a different standard towards the United States and Mexico, who are playing ball with FIFA's leadership. So I've just dealt with that in the last few years. So I don't have very much confidence that they're going to be consistent. And I think if they're going to screw anyone, they will screw the Dutch and the Belgians in this.
Yeah, going back to what Ted asked too about whether this would be a slippery slope, I don't think so. I think it's one of those things that if it makes economic sense, business sense for the Dutch league and the Belgium league to try to make that happen, and down the road after those rights deals expire, that they could actually get more money for their global TV rights deals from a joined league, that's a possibility. Now, that would require sanctioning from UEFA and or FIFA to make that happen. But I don't think it's a slippery slope. And again, a lot of it too depends on the FIFAs and UEFAs of the world, if they actually would go ahead and approve those things. Next up is Aaron Motes. Aaron says, coming from your discussion on the lack of American voices on soccer commentary in the US, I've always enjoyed listening to Dave Johnson's play-by-play of DC United games on their local affiliate. And Dave Johnson is somebody I've heard a few times, not enough really, because it's very rare that from a national audience that we get to actually hear his commentaries. But I have in the past, and I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, I used to subscribe to the MLS package, Direct Kick for years. Yeah, I would have to admit, for most of that time, DC was my preferred team. I didn't have a team after the Florida teams were contracted. I didn't have a favorite team, but the team I was following was DC United. So, because it was the only other city left in MLS at the time that I had a connection to. So, I've heard a lot of Dave Johnson. I agree. I think he's actually quite good. But I think he's somebody who his commentary style maybe is not what they're particularly looking for. Now, he developed, I would say, a very good kind of soccer commentary style, right? Mm-hmm. But now they're looking for more Fox, because he did some stuff for Fox. Fox is now looking for more Americanized voices. Dave Johnson is obviously Americanized. He's obviously American, but he's more like traditional soccer commentary, what you and I would enjoy,
right?
More than maybe some of the audience Fox is trying to cultivate. So I noticed he hasn't been doing that stuff for Fox for quite some time, it appears. I don't remember the last time I saw him on Fox. Maybe Women's World Cup in 15, maybe it was.
Wow, maybe, yeah. And what you're saying too about Fox is it's just more the talkative, You mean talking during a game, talking about stats and mentioning things that have nothing to do with the game in front of you that you're watching, that you're trying to tell the commentator to shut up, talk about the game, focus on the game, that something's happening right here that we need to talk about. Next up is Bill Reese. Bill says, which is very helpful, he says, another note on the Argentine League from last week's podcast. I think the hiccup with Paramount Plus could be that this ongoing league season in Argentina isn't technically the league. And it's talking about some of the games that have been played in Argentina in the last few weeks. It's sort of a hybrid League Cup competition to fill the calendar. They did a similar thing last fall, winter, with the Copa Liga Professional, which I think was renamed the Copa Diego Maradona after his death. This current tournament is basically the Copa Diego Part 2, and is split into two 13-team groups playing a round-robin schedule and one rivalry game against a club in the other group. The group winners then advance to a playoff, the Real Argentine League, the Superliga Argentina, which actually was the old name. I think the new name is now back to the Argentine Primera Division, is set to kick off this weekend. And I suspect that when Paramount will begin their coverage, it'll start up then, which it will. Starts this weekend. Confused? Yeah, that's Argentine domestic football for you. They basically restructure the league every couple of seasons. Wouldn't want it to get too boring down there. Which is very true. It's very difficult to stay on top of all the different changes happening. But thankfully, with Paramount Plus beginning the broadcast this weekend, and for listeners, if you are interested, if you don't have Paramount Plus, they do offer an annual plan. And at least for a limited time, and it's 50% off. So for the first year, so you can get it for half price. But starting this weekend is that, and you got Boca Juniors, River Plate playing their games, etc., etc. Fetchin says, once the World Cup rights are up in 2026, will the World Cup by any chance be moved to streaming? And if so, who will get it? If I knew the answer to that, Fetchin, I'd probably be a millionaire. It's at that point. I guess the question is how long is television is going to be the main distribution method for sports in general? And 2026, I would think we're still watching games on television. Not as much, but so who will get the rights? Who knows? I'm sure there'll be a lot of people interested. Chris Guardino says, great podcast once again. When it comes to Reese Davis hosting the Euro 2020 on ESPN this summer, I think that's an excellent choice because he's the jack of all trades at ESPN and has done well with each sport he has covered for them over the years. I also totally agree with Kartik about the lack of opportunities for American commentators being a major hurdle in their development. And the example of Kobe Jones is a good one because when he isn't doing games for Fox, he's the main co-commentator for men's college soccer on the Pac-12 network. However, the Pac-12 season only runs from September to late October, meaning that the rest of the year he's doing other things unless Fox decides to use him. I find him very informative and commentary, and it's a shame he isn't used more by Fox. Lastly, I have a question for either of you about Liga MX. Do you see in the future Liga MX having a similar TV streaming deal that the Premier League or MLS has, in which one or two networks have the rights to the games instead of the current model in which each club has their own TV streaming deal? What do you think, Kartik? Is that possible? Is that going to happen for Liga MX?
Is it? I mean, I think it's practical. Is it going to happen? No. I mean, the clubs have not wanted to give up control, and here's the reason. Although, again, the U.S. market, maybe they could. Here's the reason. The television networks in Mexico all have interests. No, I shouldn't say all. There are several clubs in Mexico that have ownership with the television networks. This was a problem. I think people who are newer fans of the Premier League may not realize that one of the things that got the Premier League off the ground was Sky buying shares and buying percentages of many of the Premier League clubs. So, for example, when the takeover happened to Manchester City, one of the parties that had to sell was B Sky B. You know, British Sky Broadcasting had to sell their portion of the club, their minority shares in the clubs. That situation still is a a prominent thing in Mexican football, and it also explains some of the affiliations when you get to U.S. and who has the U.S. rights for certain things. So untangling that, but you know, it can be untangled. I mean, once upon a time there were these sorts of things in Italy also, with right, Milan and Berlusconi, and we've had some things in Spain, and they've untangled the majority of these commitments in those countries. I just don't know if it'll happen in Mexico. Mexico, I think the broadcasters have an enormous amount of power.
I agree, Kartik. And I think the other thing, too, is that the clubs are all running off in different directions. So they're all not on kind of reading from the same hymn sheet. Like, for example, the Premier League. Premier League does the TV deals directly with, you mean, the different broadcasters. So they're having discussions with NBC. I'm sure they're talking to ESPN and CBS and anyone else who's interested, who's a major player. But it's not 20 different teams having, you mean, countless number of conversations with broadcasters and trying to do their own deals. I just don't see it happening anytime soon.
The other thing I have to point out about Mexico that maybe a lot of our listeners aren't aware of, that the clubs in Mexico also control the federation. It's like kind of backwards from what you know, the FA isn't always getting along with the Football League or the Premier League. I mean, they tend to get along better with the Premier League than they do with the Football League. But and Germany, there's now kind of a unified purpose, but there have been disputes in the past. Spain's constantly right now, the Spanish Federation and La Liga are not getting along at all. The federation in Mexico is actually controlled by the clubs. The club presidents exert most of the influence on the federation. You could argue that happens in the U.S. too, right, with MLS. It's just less direct. But so that's another impediment in Mexican football in terms of broadcast rights. These same clubs that are pulling in 20 different directions, 18 different directions, 20 different directions, are also controlling their federation, which means the federation will never step in like they have in some of these other countries and said, okay, in order to market our product better, you need a unified television deal, unified streaming deal. That will never happen in Mexico because the clubs control the federation. Mexico is very different in how it operates. And there is very club-centric model. And some people, you know, for me, I kind of appreciate that too, that the federation doesn't overrun the leagues, but the leagues actually control the federation.
Next up is Hans. And Hans says, sports events are a factor now for the networks to get subscribers to their streaming services. So I am okay with having several services to get my sports fix. What I don't like is that you have to go to different platforms like linear TV plus a streaming app. Biggest offender, Comcast Cable Channel plus Peacock. Best distribution, not necessarily the broadcast content. Paramount Plus, as they did with the Classico and ABC, plus the streaming platform, not like Comcast does their Premier League broadcasts, butchered up to aggravate those that want streaming. Hopefully the Premier League rights will land somewhere else, and if their loss of Peacock income plus drop in cable package subscribers is an indication, there is hope that they will lose it. And I think that's one of the biggest criticisms about NBC's coverage of the Premier League, and it's probably something that is a kind of almost like a subtext, something that's kind of behind the scenes that I think most of us feel, but we often kind of don't really talk about that much. But we hear, and that is that you mean that it has become more expensive to watch the Premier League, and you require a lot more options to go ahead and watch the Premier League. So in the beginning, you would have had to have NBCSN, and then through your cable provider or a satellite provider, which would have given you access to all the games through streaming. Now you're paying for streaming for almost half of the games, and then you're paying for the other half of those games. You're paying, you mean, Comcast or Fubo or whoever it is. So I think that's an undertone that Hans is talking about too, where it's an undercurrent. It is something that is very tangible, but we often don't talk about it. Jozinho says, thank you for expanding on my point regarding whomever wins the next Premier League contract should next pursue the FA Cup and the Championship for supplemental English football coverage. That would give a real opportunity for the fans of relegated Premier League clubs to still follow the club's stateside. We all know about the FA Cup final signifying the close of the season at Wembley, but arguably the Championship playoff finals are a great lead-in to the next season as well, with respect to the match intensity between the clubs obtaining the last promotion place to the Premiership. To respond to the commentator debate, I'm really surprised Phil Shane wasn't mentioned. Despite being American, he has put in an enormous amount of work and research behind the scenes to ensure he is just as effective of a footy broadcaster as one would expect from someone across the pond whose focus and specialty in football is 24/7. But the lack of effective American broadcasters, not always their fault since the focus on American sports come and go depending on the time of the year. In England and other footballing nations, the dedication is almost year-round, and that is why I listen to Talk Sport on my free time. Yeah, good points there. And yeah, I mean, the FA Cup and the Championship would make sense for Peacock. I mean, it would be a great compliment. They can talk about, I mean, the promotion race, the relegation race to try to avoid relegation, the FA Cup. It does, it's more of a natural fit, but it's something that they hardly ever talk about. It's something that's not going to generate a lot of viewers or subscribers, but it is a way to grow that Peacock product to make it more attractive. I think they should go for it if they're not already. So I agree there, Jozinho. Jesus says, one huge advantage of having commentators and analysts from the same country as the leagues they cover is that they have a better historical perspective of the teams. That is why NBCSN is so good, because most of their studio people know the Premier League well and know the teams well and often use their knowledge of a team's past to good use. Good point there. Roberto says, going back to one of the first English football commentators on TV for me, it was Toby Charles, who hosted Soccer Made in Germany starting in about 1976. I cannot remember who did the NASL Seattle Sounders games. Their rebirth in MLS was about Arlo White's first exposure to US audiences. I had left Seattle by then, but heard him on full game replays. Maybe that's why he remains one of my favorites. He may have been a better play-by-play commentator back then. Dave Roberts says, I'm curious about something and would like to get your opinion on it. Basically, I remember reading once that the hockey's biggest problem is that the average hockey fan only cares about their local team and only cares about the rest of the league in the playoffs. Global hockey is really only a thing during the Olympics, with all due respect to the various hockey leagues across Europe. That said, I wonder if the same can be said about MLS. Speaking entirely anecdotally, here in Seattle, whenever I go to my favorite soccer bars, people are always packed in for Sounders games, but you'd be hard-pressed to see anyone when a random MLS game is on. However, the same fans will watch any European match just because it's on. In other words, I think it's fair to say your average American fan is a fan of the European game and a fan of their local team, while the rest of the teams in that respective league don't seem to matter. I'd be especially curious to hear Kartik's opinion on the matter because of his first-hand experience with the US lower divisions. That said, personally, it seems to me like the older I get, I am becoming less and less interested in your random soccer game unless one of my favorite teams is playing, except for really, really big matches.
Yeah, so Dave, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. Maybe it was probably several years ago, but I was in Orlando for an Orlando City MLS match, and I was hanging around with the supporters group, with the Ruckus, and Orlando played their match. It was a mid-afternoon match on, I think it was the ESPN game, and then there was an FS1 game after, which included Seattle, by the way. And I thought I was doing my duty after the match when I went back to the bar with these guys, saying, "Hey, let's watch let's watch the Seattle, I think it was Seattle and Kansas City, SKC and the Sounders. And they were all laughing at me. They were literally making fun of me, like, well, do you have a tape of this morning's Bundesliga match? Let's throw that on. I think somebody actually asked, like, if you have a DVR of the Bayern match, this game, if we want to watch soccer, let's watch that. And I remember Bayern was – this was already after Fox had gotten the Bundesliga rights. So it was a wake-up call to me. And they were all kind of making fun of me for wanting to watch this additional MLS game. And then I started talking to them, and they were like, we don't care about the rest of the league. We don't care about those teams. We don't like MLS. We like soccer, and we're in Orlando, so we love Orlando City. But if we're going to watch soccer, we're going to watch the Premier League or the Bundesliga or La Liga or whatever. It was a eye opener to me, and then I started seeing more of that. But that was like the and I think I told the story before, Chris, on this podcast many years ago when it happened, that it just absolutely opened my eyes to this thing that there's no while soccer journalists and some of the people in our kind of soccer vacuum on Twitter make MLS into a cause, and you'll see Revolution fans championing watching the Galaxy against the Quakes. In general, MLS fans are fans of their club, and they don't care about the rest of the league. I've seen many more examples of that since then. But that was the eye opener for me, that particular incident.
And for Major League Soccer, that's a dangerous circumstance, because it's one of those things that, I mean, we know that the TV ratings aren't the greatest. We know that relatively, depending on which way you look at it, they're plateauing or maybe slightly up in some places. But for the most part, it's been a challenge. And it is one of those things. It's such a huge country. There's so many teams. And that's, I mean, when you have soccer fans who are only watching their local team, that doesn't give you much of an impact to a nationwide TV audience. So if you're I don't know, CBS, or if you're a TNT or whoever it may be, and you want to, you're interested in the rights to get MLS, but you want to find out, okay, well, if we have a, Colorado against Sporting Kansas City game on, you mean, what's the expectation of the viewing numbers for this? Let's go back into the Nielsen ratings and see how that did last season. And it might have been, if you were lucky to have it even on television, on a national broadcast, it would probably be less than 100,000 people. So you could have an infomercial on there and have a greater viewing number for that. So that's the challenge. And yeah, Dave, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the things that it doesn't change overnight. And to try to cultivate an audience to follow a league, it's really difficult, especially if you live in Kansas City and you're a Sporting Kansas City fan. Why should you be interested in watching LA Galaxy or Seattle Sounders or whoever it may be? In the past, it would have been, or currently still, it would be okay if there's any big stars or any big talking points. But MLS has been down that road so many times before. That doesn't make any difference really to the TV ratings. Bring in a Steven Gerrard or bring in Wayne Rooney or whoever it may be. It comes down to me what I think really is quality football. And the league has grown so big that there's so many teams that it's more challenging to be a fan of Major League Soccer and to stay on top of all those teams. You mean it? That's the other jeopardy of kind of this overexpansion, is it reduces the quality of the football, of the soccer, and it makes it less likely that you're going to grow a national footprint. So there's a lot of worrying signs here, and especially with MLS going into next year, having their TV deal and that bidding process for that next TV deal, the likelihood is that I don't think there's going to be a lot of interested parties out there willing to put in tons of money. But having that deal connected to the U.S. national team, both on the women's side and the men's side, that's really the exciting factor. That's the thing that really will interest a CBS or a TNT or a Fox, etc. So having said that, Kartik, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Thank you, everyone, for your listener mailbag. We had 2 weeks' worth of letters, so it was quite a lot. And then two more things, actually, I forgot to mention. One is we have the recipient. We're ready to announce the winner of the $100 gift card to World Soccer Shop. So congratulations to Matthew Schlemmer, who filled out the survey and gave us some great feedback about the podcast. And Matthew's name was picked out at random. So we'll send him a $100 gift card. And last but not least, Kartik, there was one more TV rating I wanted to mention too that we skipped over. And that was the Superclásico. And that was Telemundo's coverage of Liga MX's Superclásico featuring Chivas against Club America. And that delivered an average of 1.7 million total viewers on Telemundo and Universo a couple weeks ago. So great numbers
yeah.
there.
And we didn't do a show last week, so I didn't get my commentary in on this. I'll be very brief, Chris. I was not thrilled with how Telemundo – I thought it was substandard compared to what I'm used to on Univision for the same match.
In what way, though?
I think some of the camera work wasn't as good. I think the commentary – and again, my Spanish is kind of off, but commentary was kind of labored, you know, and I love Andres Contor, but maybe I'm just used to Univision for this game, and the Chivas home games have been off of television for a while, and I've been watching Univision for the game matches that are the America home matches, but I thought it just didn't feel the same. Maybe it's just you're used to a network covering a big match. Same thing happens when their rights, I guess, in American sports, when the rights NBC covered the NBA and it went to ABC. Maybe the very first match was the very first game people thought was awkward. But I shared my thoughts with like a couple people in the industry, and they didn't push back as hard as I thought they would. So anyway, that was just my analysis.
And I think, too, a little bit of this, too, at least for me, would be that when you have these major games, so if it's a game that's being played at Wembley Stadium and it's, I don't know, League Cup final, right? And it's a game that you're used to having 90,000 fans in the stadium, and those fans are just as much a part of that game as the players are. And then you have a game that's, I mean, there's no one there, right? Other than the players and
right.
staff.
Right, it's on another network, too. And it's on another network. That might be part of it, yeah.
Right, definitely. All right, Kartik, so heading into another weekend of football from around the world, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.